Some basketball to get to this morning for a Wednesday TSL. How Tennessee rebounded in the second half to down the Racers, and you've probably heard about it, but an SEC foe goes down at home. All that and more. Tyler, Will, the starting lineup is on your radio now.
Studios of Cumulus Media Knoxville. This show belongs to you at 656-9900. 656-9900. The sports you need before sunrise is on the air. You're inside the starting lineup with Tyler Ivins and Will West on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Day of November. Good morning to you, Tyler Ivins, Will West, Budweiser Studios at Cumulus Broadcasting, 656-9900. All of the calls being joined on the Stanley Fitz and Gates hotline. You can join us at 1-866-656-9900. Wednesday, lots we have to get into, including start, bench, cut, and you have the University of Kentucky last night taking the Purple Aces of Evansville a little too lightly. We'll talk about a historic night not only for the University of Kentucky, but also a historic night for college basketball. I shouldn't chuckle. Look, I like working in this industry, we're all fans, we're all fanatics, we all do what we need to do to talk about the things we need to talk about. And you never want to see program or programs go through the things that they do, but upsets do happen. But man, if you live in Lexington, Kentucky over the last 96 hours, you are having a bad, bad 4 days.
It has not gone well. And here's what's weird, just in my experience, Kentucky fans... Like, I just look at this, and if I'm a Kentucky fan, I just say college basketball will be fine by the time we get to the end of the year.
Yeah, it's not now.
The football game would have been a different story, but I don't. It doesn't seem that Kentucky basketball fans handle it that way. So, like, it's one thing that the one thing I probably get on the Tennessee fan base for more than anything else is treating college basketball as if it's college football.
Sure,
but I will, you know, in like that one loss matters. One loss doesn't matter until you get to the NCAA tournament, maybe the SEC tournament. You know, or if it's a loss, that's the difference in winning a conference championship or not winning a conference championship. But it does seem like the Kentucky fan base has that type of mentality as well, where if they lose that one game, they kind of lose their minds for a second quite often. At least a vocal minority, I would say, at the very least.
Tennessee, Murray State. We'll get to that coming up in a little bit. Listen, this was a Vols team who a lot of people thought they'd be able to go in, take care of business against Murray State without a problem, without a wink, and they would move on and they can focus on their matchup Saturday in Toronto against Washington, a top 20 ranked team. Not so much. The Racers pushing the Volunteers through the first half of the game, so much so where people who actually made it out to Thompson Bowling Arena for that 9 o'clock tip off between the two teams went into halftime saying, something's not right here between the two teams. Yeah, Murray State actually had Tennessee on their heels the first 20 minutes of the basketball game. And Will, I guess it's going to happen whenever Murray State shot 50% from three-point range. They dropped 7 of 14 in the first half. And a lot of fans said, not only am I staying up late for a Tennessee game at TBA, but there's a chance that a Ja Morant-less Murray State team, led by an Oak Ridge graduate, Matt McMahon, coming in here and giving Tennessee all they got.
No, look, but if you're knocking down 50% of your threes and Lamonte Turner is off the way that Lamonte Turner was off yesterday, they can't jump out to that kind of lead, right? It was 14 at one point in the second half, but Tennessee stormed back, and goodness, did they storm back. Good on Lamonte Turner, too, because he's been shooting combo guard, right? Kind of shoot first point guard.
Sure.
And we saw Lamonte Turner last night with 14 dimes on his way to helping, like realizing my shot's not falling, let me go do something else. And so he became, as you know, more of a facilitator as well than we probably have seen him at any point in time during his career at Tennessee. So good on him. Huge game for Yves Ponce. Just a massive, ginormous game for Jordan Bowden.
New career high.
Yeah, new career high for him. And so, I mean, look, for Tennessee, it was just kind of a team effort from that starting five. Any questions that you still have? That's a very nice win. Don't get me wrong. You'd rather have the win. Everybody's plus minus on the bench was negative, I think. Maybe there was one play. Jalen Johnson's was not. Everybody else that came off the bench, their plus minus was negative in that game.
Don't have a problem with it.
Okay.
I think this is still working off the rust. Now, granted, you'd like to have some of those things put in order. But one thing I did realize, and I had to make sure it wasn't more on Murray State and their inefficiencies in the second half, they were still shooting the basketball pretty well. But Tennessee held Murray State's only 19 points.
Back down to earth. And Tennessee did a good job kind of just grinding them out. Yeah.
They did. But even when Murray State was getting their shots up, they were still hitting them.
Yeah.
Now, I will say this, though. And maybe for the same reason of, hey, do we have any worries about the bench two games in? No. Are we still questioning Eve Pons after two games? Because Eve Pons has a nice night last night as well. He has 19 points and four boards. Are people wondering who's going to start trying to absorb some of the points that were left behind by four NBA players? Is Eve Pons through two games doing his part to absorb some of the points left behind by four NBA players?
And who's that third option to, right? Who is that going to be?
Well, you hope that third option is going to be Eve Pons.
Well, night in, night out, it may end up having to be a different guy every time. And also, Lamonte Turner's not going to go 2-12 from the field in most games. It's just not right. The way that that's going to go. But in games when you talk about a guard-heavy team, especially you have a couple of guards specifically that you work the ball through. If one of them has a bad shooting night, it can be very tough to go win a basketball game against a well-coached team like Murray State last night. But you had that bad shooting night, and not only were you able to come back, you ended up blowing Murray State out. And when you had one of those bad shooting nights. So the question is going to be, who's that third person that can step up when you start talking about a guard-heavy team that you get a lot of your offensive production based off of just a couple of players that are both in your backcourt? Last night it was Eve Pons. How often can it be Eve Pons, especially when you get into SEC play and beyond?
Tennessee, they have a nice 19-point victory against Murray State last night, their next opponent. That's a 5 o'clock tip-off from Toronto. It's a neutral site game against a top 20-ranked Washington team who the Huskies might have been looking ahead a little bit, not to get into it. Huskies were supposed to blow Mount St. Mary's out of the water. They struggled last night. Washington did their final opponent before they squared up against Tennessee.
Bit of a Donnybrook.
They had a little bit of a, hey, you should win this game by 27 points. They won it by 10, and they needed free throws to ice it away to even make it a 10-point victory. So not to take Washington lightly by any means, but two 2-0 teams getting together north of the border. You know what? What are the chances that people who are going to this game from Knoxville find it warmer in Toronto, Canada at this time of year than it is in Knoxville, Tennessee? A little chilly outside.
Yes, it is.
Hopefully you guys.
Feels like it was 8 degrees when I walked outside this morning. I told you I sprayed the de-icing spray on the truck. It's a part of the truck outside the other two cars in the garage. Sprayed the de-icing spray on the window. I turned around and got up to the top of the neighborhood, and it had refrozen again. And so I did it again. And then I got to the end of the second street over before I get to North Shore and drive down. Had to get out of the car and do it again the third time. By then, the heater was warm enough that the defrost was able to keep it off. But the two different times I have to get out of the car and get ice off of there.
I see your winter story. I raise you winter story. My neighbor across the cul-de-sac's kid graduated, so his basketball goal's still up.
Yeah.
We have a kid at the end of the street who likes to come down to the cul-de-sac and get his shots up. Angry little kid. I walked out to get the mail yesterday, and he was just throwing the basketball against the backboard, not even attempting to put it in. Just anger. TJ, what's wrong with you? Why is it every county around us got out of school today, but we didn't?
Oh, I will say.
TJ, get those shots up, dude.
I got messaged by someone on the school board that said there are members of the school board that were accusing us of trying to shame them into closing Knox County schools yesterday.
No.
And my response to that was yes. Yes, we did.
Okay, well, then maybe we were.
Yeah, we totally did.
If that wasn't dripping with sarcasm, then yeah, absolutely we were.
Yes, that's right.
Eric Kane, hopefully you've had your coffee this morning. Let's get a Tennessee Lottery Sports Minute. Let's talk about Kentucky falling. One of the biggest upsets in college basketball history happened last night. Tennessee, they sat up, looking up at the scoreboard, watching the game play out. Evansville, if you don't know about Evansville, Indiana, and their college program called the Purple Aces, you're going to on the other side. 99.1 FM, the sports animal.
This is a Tennessee Education Lottery Sports Minute.
All right, as the guys are saying, it was a sluggish start for Tennessee in the first half, but the Vols prevailed. A strong second half, finishing on a 16-0 run to down Murray State, 82-63. Jordan Bowden set a career-high 26 points as UT extended the nation's longest home win streak to 28 games. Other scores in college basketball, Evansville stuns number one Kentucky 67-64. Second-ranked Duke handled Central Arkansas 105-54. Number three Gonzaga handled North Dakota 97-66. And 14th-ranked Oregon outlasted number 13 Memphis 82-74. The second edition of the college football playoff rankings has LSU at 1, Ohio State checked in at 2, Clemson to 3, Georgia at 4, edged out Alabama for that fifth spot. Slots 6 through 10 belong to Oregon, Utah, Minnesota, Penn State, and Oklahoma. Add Quick Cash to your next Tennessee Lottery for a chance to win $500 instantly, plus a chance to win the jackpot drawing later. Have some fun now and later with Tennessee Cash from your Tennessee Lottery. 614, get a check of the roads, Pete Michaels traffic. I'm Eric Kane.
Tennessee 82-63 over Murray State. Strong second half for the Vols.
You ready for nugget time? Anybody want a nugget?
Only if it's delicious, juicy nugget.
Yeah, nugs, not drugs, kids. Okay. Lamonte Turner, 14 assists last night. The highest single-game assist total by a Tennessee player since? Would you like to guess?
Single-game.
Assistances.
Give me C.J. Watson.
LaMarcus Golden in 1994.
Ooh, got to go even a little bit deeper than that.
How about that? LaMarcus Golden blasts from the past.
Were you just sitting
on that guy?
Were you sitting on the basement couch last night going, let me see if I can reach the bottom of the bucket and get this one.
It was in the AP's notes with the story.
Okay.
Again, so.
Okay.
I don't know if it was in the Tennessee notes, but it was in the AP notes.
Real quick, anything to take away from the Tennessee game besides the fact that it was, all right, it's 9 o'clock, we need to wake up, and then second half, it's let's blow the doors off of them.
Share the ball. That's part of it. Look, Tennessee, 12 of 22 from three-point range is not what you're normally going to do. 6 of 8 for Jordan Bowden is not what you can expect night in, night out. But you were also 2 for 12 from the field for Lamonte Turner, and he was willing and able to adjust his game to get his teammates more involved. 1, 2, Tennessee shared the ball, 21 assists, and assists will tell you how a basketball game goes, unless you just have some weird, something weird and wonky that happens because somebody just ends up, you know, shooting 65% of their threes in a single game. The team with the most assists is usually going to win a basketball game. 21 assists, just 9 turnovers in the game. Tennessee did a really good job protecting the basketball there. One other thing, I guess, Josiah James.
It's two games.
But here's the thing we need to learn about Josiah James. He's going to be fine, but he probably isn't a one-and-done player right now.
I think that would actually be beneficial for Tennessee, and not only their fan base, because they see the names that are being brought in by the 2020 class, and you're going to need somebody to help kind of groom them, even if they're only just a sophomore. And I think if you put Josiah James and his experience, his second year in SEC play, alongside some of the guys who were coming in, and look, there are going to be learning curves. Well, you saw a bunch of freshmen last night in the Kentucky-Evansville game where they didn't really know what they were doing late in crunch time. In Evansville, twice in the final 4.5 minutes, had shot clock violations.
Yeah.
Didn't even know how much time was left in the possession. So sometimes these 18- to 19-year-old kids, whenever it comes to crunch time, even when the games are happening in November and December, they need somebody to kind of show them the way. So you know what, Josiah James? 5-star athlete out of Carolina in high school, great for him.
Gonna
but
be
it
fine.
Looks like it's going to be more than just a 12-month stay on campus.
Yeah, probably going to be in the NBA. It's just, okay, so that's one thing I think people don't realize, or maybe I hope that now that Tennessee's been good for a while, that between Scottie Hobson and Josiah James, people now, because I remember people crushed Scottie Hobson.
Right.
Most 5-star guys don't end up being NBA-ready players. That's just not the way that works. But what they end up being are good, solid players that improve throughout the season, and then the next year they get really, really, really good. So that is okay, and they seem to grow in that second year, and sometimes it takes that third year for them to grow as well.
656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. All right, we need to kind of pull back the door on this one. We've been waiting to hear from John Calipari. We've been waiting to hear from the Evansville crew.
Shout out to Walter McCarty last night.
This was such a big win for him. Bringing the Purple Aces to Lexington, the Kentucky legend. Last night, the money line closed at plus 3,850. If you laid a hundo last night and you bet on Evansville to go to Rupp Arena and pick up the W, you won almost $3,900.
Goodness.
The line closed last night at 25 points. Here's the final 6 seconds. Evansville ESPN Radio, the Purple Aces, shock the world, and they pull up the upset over college basketball's number one team.
Maxie throws it into Maxie with 5 seconds. Maxie with 4, 3 seconds. Elevates on a 3. It's an air ball,
wow.
And the Aces have gone the road to Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky, and stunned the number one Wildcats 67-64. They shock college basketball on this Tuesday night. What a win for Coach McCarty's return to Kentucky. Yes!
So let me ask you, at any point in time watching that game tick down, knowing that Tennessee was butt up against it, that you thought, and I hate that we have to think this way because I've been trying to give officiating a reprieve, if you will. I hate that now it's becoming the norm that anytime your favorite team struggles immediately, it's not their fault, it's the officiating.
Well, here's the thing, though. We've also had bad officiating, so there's a little bit of both.
I have, and maybe I just watch too many games with too many of my closest friends who that is kind of their go-to, It's always the official's fault. I have one friend that now I refuse to watch sporting events with him because the first time Tennessee commits an offsides penalty or Tennessee's false start, pass interference.
We all have that friend or family member that it was always the referee's fault. Hey, we got those callers. They would have said, well, always the referee's fault.
But last night when Evansville failed to extend their lead and it was within a possession, two possessions in the final 3 minutes, I mean, it came in the back of my mind, when do the officials start making their calls here at Rupp Arena so Kentucky can get out of this game with at least a 1 or 2 point victory against Evansville? That crept into my mind more than once, and I'm happy to see that calls at least stayed consistent as they did throughout the entirety of the game, and that Evansville was just a better basketball team. If you watch this game from the start, I tuned in roughly about 5 minutes ago in the first half, and I saw Evansville had the lead, and I thought, okay, well, how quickly will this evaporate once the ball tips in the second half? And it didn't. Evansville was consistent. Evansville's defense was better. The perimeter defense was better. And they just flat out got after it for 40 minutes. And they were tougher than Kentucky. The bunch of the All-Americans and the five stars Calipari put on the floor last night looked like they hadn't been checked like that without a whistle probably since they were in middle school. And those guys at one point in time were going up there not even attempting decent shots or high percentage shots. They were driving the lane hoping for whistles, and they weren't getting the whistles.
So I got to be real. I didn't even check into this game until I saw that about, 4 minutes left, that this was something that was on the table. So, Kentucky will pull away.
Right.
Xavier, Missouri's actually an even match game. So let's see how that goes. And so I was watching Xavier, Missouri, and finally I kept seeing people on Twitter saying, no, seriously, this might actually happen before I flipped it over. So I don't know what had led up to that last, you know what I mean, the first 36 minutes of the game. I have absolutely no idea. In that, it just looked like, sometimes Kentucky looks typically lost at the beginning part of the season. And that's what it looked like. Typically lost Kentucky basketball team in the open floor. Guys not know where they need to be. Guys getting beat off the dribble. Guys getting in the half court, kind of just blowing assignments and stuff like that. That's what it looked like, was a well-coached Evansville, tough, you're right, Evansville team versus the normal Kentucky team that looks like they're lost.
What do you have to lose? You're a Missouri Valley Conference team coming to Rupp Arena. Shoot your shot, play your game, and then if you don't win, guess what? You're still Evansville, and you still have to go back and probably win the MVC tournament in St. Louis to get to the NCAA tournament. But how many more times does a team from the Valley have to knock somebody off before maybe people go, you know, maybe we shouldn't take MVC so lightly? I mean, I covered plenty of MVC games. I've covered plenty of Evansville Purple Aces games. That effort I saw last night was not the same Evansville team that I had seen for 5 years.
So, okay, but seeing McCarty last night get that win, are you surprised we don't get more Rick Pitino disciples that have college basketball jobs? Just because we've seen, like, it still works. Like, what Pitino does as far as get up and down the floor, play physical basketball, lay up a three-pointer, shoot a lot of threes. Like, that works. Auburn last year, Bruce, that's what he had, so that's what Bruce adjusted to.
Right.
And it worked for him last year. I mean, Billy Donovan, how many times we watched that work for him? Like, it just seems to work when these Pitino guys go kind of implement that system. And Walter McCarty last night seemed to have that system rolling.
Does sad John Calipari do anything for you?
No, it's fine. I mean, the thing is, at the end of the day, I've watched Calipari over and over again. I mean, it seems like it's at literally every year that they take a bad loss early. Either they play another power conference team or top 10 and just get their brains beat in.
Which probably should have happened in the Michigan State probably game earlier this year, but they flipped course.
Yeah, probably should. Well, and also Michigan State could hit the broadside of the bar.
Good point.
And a lot of times it's make or miss in basketball. But you either get this type of loss from Calipari early, or you get maybe not this bad normally, or they get beat by 30 by Duke like they did last year.
Kaner, can we hear from John Calipari? This is what the Kentucky basketball coach had to say to open up his presser last night after the 67-64 loss at home as the number one team in the country to Evansville.
Let me, first of all, congratulate Evansville. Walter and their team deserve to win. If we would have somehow pulled it out, you know, it would have been kind of wouldn't even have been fair, because they fought us the whole game and they were the tougher team. They executed, they made shots and threes and free throws. My hat's off to them. It's hard to do that in this building, but they were more ready to play. He had his team better prepared than I had my team.
You can kind of hear the Evansville fans in the background. Largest upsets by D1 teams in the last 50 seasons. Are you ready for this?
Who you got?
It's actually the second time last night Kentucky makes the list. Again, as I mentioned, a 25-point underdog, Evansville knocked off number one Kentucky there at Rupp Arena. There's only two more teams who have had a bigger upset victory based on point spreads of the last 50 years. In 2015, Western Illinois, they went into Wisconsin and knocked off a Badger team that they were 25.5-point underdogs to. And Will, the largest upset based on point spreads in the last 50 seasons, Gardner Webb in 2007 was a 26-point underdog. They knocked off Kentucky at the time that was ranked number 20 in the land. So what have we learned? If the past is the best predictor of the future, if you are a mid-major team and you are a large point spread going up against Kentucky, why not? Why not? Damn. Why not put a couple bucks here or there? Because sometimes Kentucky, those young guys, they just don't focus for 40 minutes of basketball, and you hear it there from Calipari.
I don't know about putting a couple bucks on it, because, man, I hold a lot of times on the money line, you're going to be in trouble, right? So, because you that, only get one or two of these
advice,
a year.
That's degenerate advice, Ivins. That's degenerate advice.
And you only get one or two of those a year. So it's also, I think it might be bad degenerate advice on top of that. But, and who knows how to pick that one out. But if you are a mid-major team, you can walk in any college basketball arena in the nation and feel like you got a shot, right? Can we not on outside shots? And if we get our outside shot going, even if we did, they don't fall early, can we you can, because again, basketball a lot of times is make or miss.
Right.
And so you're probably going to have to play, you know, them plus the whistle. And if you can keep your composure, play physical basketball, knock down shots, you have a chance to beat anybody out there.
Kentucky's next home game comes up Sunday. They take on Utah Valley. Question one, do you know what their mascot is?
Utah Valley?
Utah Valley.
No.
I'll give you $100 right now without looking it up. You become Utah Valley.
No idea whatsoever.
No, they're the Wolverines.
Hey, there
should
we
have the good Lord put mercy on their soul for what Kentucky basketball is going to do to them when they come in there?
Yeah, they were going to do that anyway. So they'll go get their check and it'll be fine.
Can we just go ahead and make the spread 51 points right now and just call it a day?
Ooh, 51. I would take under 51.
No team in college basketball won by 51 last night, did they?
No.
Wait, Duke beat Central Arkansas by 51?
Did they?
Ivins, how would you know that? Wink. Let's come back on the other side. We are going to get into, while you were sleeping, the Duke score from last night's game against Central Arkansas will not be while you were sleeping. But who was watching Maction last night? Anybody?
Literally no one. Tyler Ivins.
I had three screens up last night. Serious action happening between Western Michigan and our boys up in Athens, Ohio. Man, Frank Solich just can't win the big game in November. 99.1 FM, you're listening to The Sports Animal.
Times your bedtime comes early. Let us do the work and keep you up to date while you are sleeping. Being brought to you by Mr. Electric. They have the power to make things better. Online at mrelectric.com.
I don't care what anybody says. You're getting your Maction scores, okay? I'm
just, look. No. They need the score because, like I said, no one actually watched it, so people need the score.
Timeout. Come on. Somebody last night said, I need Tuesday night college football, and I'm going to watch Maction, whether I like it or not.
Ivins, that's who?
0-10 no, Akron.
Brian Rice. I'll give it to Brian Rice, probably watching Maction last night as well.
The spread was 17 points in favor of Eastern Michigan. Good on Akron, man. At least they got on the board twice. Eastern Michigan 42, Akron 14. And actually a game I had to keep flipping back and forth between because two televisions weren't working last night. Western Michigan in overtime. They're better than Ohio, 37-34. For those of you out there wondering, who are the best teams in the MAC? Well, it was supposed to be Western Michigan, and they proved it last night as they continue to extend their lead there in the MAC West.
All right.
Ivins, how do you know that? I don't know why I know the division alignments. Don't ask.
Tennessee gets the win over Murray State, 82-63. Elsewhere in the SEC last night, Auburn topped South Alabama. It was a last-second shot from just past half court that didn't fall for South Alabama, 70-69, the final score. Auburn gets the win there. Number 21, Xavier top Conzo Martin's Missouri team, 63-58. But if you saw this, taking the L for Penny. Taking the L. I saw a few people say, the NCAA should just let James Wiseman play. He's not that good anyway. Well, Oregon topped Memphis last night, 82-74.
What you wish for.
I thought, wow, that's rough. And of course, Evansville knocking off number one Kentucky, 67-64. 25-point favorite? Is that what Kentucky was in the game?
25-point favorite. It's the third largest spread for an underdog to win in the last 50 years. And then another nugget that came up. This is now, Will, the first time since the 48-49 season that the Associated Press number one team has lost twice in the month of November. Remember, Kentucky beat Michigan State last week at Madison Square Garden, only for Kentucky to earn the number one ranking, then be down by Evansville last night.
All right, late last night as well, or later in the evening, if you will. College Football Playoff Committee released their rankings.
Right.
Number one's LSU, of course, right?
Agree.
Number two is Ohio State. I think most people agree with that. Number three is Clemson.
Yep.
Number four is Georgia.
Nope.
Georgia.
No.
Has Georgia beat anybody good?
See, it's funny you say that because when you look at Georgia's resume, their only W is the largest gathering cocktail party. I'm calling it both of it in Jacksonville, Florida.
Yeah. So,
but here's what I will say to anybody out there who goes, yeah, Tyler, that's a great victory. Yeah, Will, that's a great victory. Is it, though? Especially when your loss this year came to a South Carolina team who is now 4-6 on the year. And Carolina's only victories against teams that have a pulse are Kentucky and Vanderbilt.
So here's the problem I have, right?
Yeah, well,
so
tell me, because I got lots of them, too.
The playoff committee last week for the 4-5 ranking, well, we're not looking at the eyeball test. We have to look at the schedule. The strength of schedule is just so much better for Penn State than it is for Clemson. So Penn State has to be 4, and they have to be number 5. Well, then when it came to Ohio State, LSU, of course you have to go by the eyeball test. Ohio State's just better than LSU. That's just what it is. And so this week for them to throw Georgia in at number 4, neither by record nor by eyeball test. I guess that'd be Notre Dame as well. But neither by record nor by eyeball test would I look at this, or by schedule or eyeball test, would I look at this and say, Georgia needs to be the 4th best team in the nation right now.
I'm glad
now.
You brought that up, because that does nothing for me. Georgia's win against Notre Dame now does nothing for me.
It does almost nothing for me. That's a top 25 team, but you beat, you know what I mean, the 21st best, you know, best team in the nation at home by 7.
I know there are Notre Dame fans that are going to take exception to that, but I think even Notre Dame fans a year removed from going to the college football playoff would say, yeah, that win should do nothing for you.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to find any way to just absolutely pull the rug out from under Georgia.
No, but
I'm
Michigan
not.
Beat them like they stole something.
Right, and guess what Michigan isn't doing this year? Impressing anybody.
And they barely got by Virginia Tech. They barely got by USC. Those teams have problems. They did beat down the David Cutcliffe's Duke team this past weekend, but like I'm with you. Like the Notre Dame win is not what we thought the Notre Dame win was when they were a top 10 team early in the season.
Like, we need to go ahead and just call this for what it is, okay? There are realistically only 5 teams. You know what? I'll even expand it out to 7, okay? I'll expand it out to 7. Realistically, there are only 7 teams who can win the national championship right now, November 13th. 4 teams that are currently ranked in the top 4, and your 5, 6, and 7 team is Bama, Oregon's ranked 6th, and then you got to take Minnesota into account as well. Even though they're 8th, Utah is wedged in between them. And they all essentially eliminate each other, and you find out who your 4 best teams are. Minnesota, if you don't run the table, which including that would be beating Ohio State and Indianapolis for the Big Ten championship, you're done. That answers that question. Georgia, beating LSU in Atlanta.
I don't know that they're not done anyway. But this is set up for Alabama with one loss, not winning their division, to get into the college football playoff ahead of Minnesota and Baylor. That's what the committee has set themselves up for.
If Minnesota runs the table, the Big Ten has a spot. It's either going to be Ohio State or Minnesota.
I don't know that I'm...
You're telling me an undefeated Minnesota team went to Indianapolis and then beat Ohio State?
There's no way they shouldn't, right? There's no way they shouldn't get
Minnesota's not beating Ohio State, but a Big Ten team, whoever that Big Ten team is, either Ohio State is such a juggernaut that Minnesota goes to Indianapolis and beats them that they get that spot, or Ohio State keeps the spot that they've earned throughout the first 2 weeks of the playoff rankings.
I just look at it this way. The committee gave themselves that out by putting the rankings the way that they did.
Okay.
Minnesota's sitting right now at number 8. Baylor's sitting at 13. Now, would they jump Baylor all the way up? Probably. Would they jump Minnesota all the way up? Probably. But the fact that you've got one loss Alabama, one loss, the fact that you've set this up this way tells me it's not off the table, and the committee is going to do everything they can to put Alabama in there.
Okay,
I'll just go and tell you that is what we're about to see, is that the committee is going to do literally everything they can to put Alabama into the college football playoff.
I have a feeling that you and I are kind of on the same page, but last question as we head to the reset, Caner's Corner on the other side. Who, in your opinion, should be higher ranked, one loss Oregon or one loss Oklahoma?
I would put Oklahoma there, because I look at the Oklahoma loss as a little bit of a fluke, and I think that that's just who Oregon is.
If anybody's going to have a say of who's going to get into the college football playoff, look no further than Auburn. Auburn this week has number 4 Georgia and still has number 5 Alabama to come. So Gus Malzahn, flip your coin. You're kind of like Tommy Lee Jones in Two-Face. Who goes where? Who goes where? Tyler Ivins, Will West, Caner's Corner on the other side. First, Eric does have our next Tennessee Lottery Sports Minute.
This is a Tennessee Education Lottery Sports Minute.
All right, in baseball, Astros pitcher Mike Fiers told The Athletic that Houston sold signs with a camera During the 2017 World Series championship run, the Giants have named former Philly skipper Gabe Kapler their next manager. Mike Schilt of the Cardinals and Rocco Bandelli of the Twins have been named NL and AL Managers of the Year, and the Angels have hired Tony La Russa as Senior Advisor for Baseball Operations. Around the NBA, Philadelphia beat Cleveland 98-97. VFL's Tobias Harris, Josh Richardson combined for 25 points. Lakers stopped the Suns 123-115. Atlanta defeated Denver 126-121. And the Jazz got by the Nets 119-114. Lady Vols' Renia Davis has been named the SEC Player of the Week after averaging 16.7 points per game in three contests over the season's first week. She finished with 33 against Notre Dame. And, of course, it was Tennessee over Murray State, finishing off with a 16-0 run, 82-63 the final score. Jordan Bowden, a career high, 26 points. Add quick cash to your next Tennessee lottery for a chance to win $500 instantly. Plus, it's a chance to win the jackpot drawing later. Have some fun now and later with Tennessee Cash in your Tennessee lottery. 647, we're going to check out the roads. Pete Michaels traffic. I'm Eric Kane.
All right, final segment of hour number one. Tyler Ivins and Will West, Budweiser Studios for a Wednesday. 656-9900. Eric Kane now with Kaner's Corner.
There's only so much you can do in a three-hour show. Let's find out what missed the cut today. It's Kaner's Corner here on The Starting Lineup. Powered by New Balance Knoxville in the Suburban Shopping Center.
All right, guys, a big developing story in Major League Baseball that may have the Houston Astros in some hot water. Former Astros pitcher Mike Fiers told The Athletic that the team used cameras to steal signs during the 2017 World Series championship run. The camera apparently was in center field, fed a stream into the dugout. Teammates would then decide the signs, decode them, and relay them to hitters. Allegations for the Astros have been going on for a couple of years now. The Nationals were even warned before this year's World Series of the antics in the past.
There's video evidence. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter last night. They did it. I mean, it's right in some video plans today. Like, they did this. They cheated and did this. You must vacate the 2017 World Series, I say, as a Dodger fan.
That's not happening.
You must vacate. You must not just vacate. You must forfeit the 2017 World Series.
But at the end of the day, all this is going to be is just one big, massive fine, right? And loss of job.
Doing nothing. Because you know what Joe Torre does?
No.
I do more to punish baseball teams who cheat than Joe Torre does. You know what I mean? Like, Joe Torre does nothing. He is the most inactive human being in the history of sports right now. You know what that guy is going to do? Nothing. And baseball is going to bury this under the rug and do nothing about it.
I couldn't disagree with you more.
Do you think so?
What do you think is
going to
happen?
They're going to take away. Remember what the Atlanta Braves did last year when they were up to no good and they had to strip them a little bit of their international pool money?
Yeah.
Nobody brings this up unless you're kind of a hardcore baseball fan. And let's be fair. I'm a nerd. I'm an idiot. All right. There are a lot of people out there who look at it and they go, I was just a nerd and an idiot.
That about something completely different, but continue.
International pool money in Major League Baseball is very important. A lot of the players out there that you cheer for today, Braves fans, Ronald Acuna, a lot of the Roberto Perez's out there, the Hispanic and the international players who have stolen your hearts and you buy their jerseys, how do you think they got to the United States? Because they were drafted in the international pool. So if you're Joe Torre, if you're the rest of Major League Baseball, you go through, you start subtracting some of their international pool
money.
But
Atlanta was doing things the wrong way in that realm. This has nothing to do with that.
No. Hear me out. I'm just explaining. Do you remember that fee that the Braves got hit with last year?
Yes.
One's like, well, that's not that big of a deal. It's just international pool money. That was the only reason why I brought the Braves into it was to prove that they got hit with international pool money. And people are like, well, that's not that big of a deal.
That's huge.
International pool money is more important than the draft picks that you get in the Major League Baseball draft.
So, okay, what would be
if you're Joe Torre right now, you hit the Astros in both pockets. You hit them in both the MLB draft pocket with a first round or a second round pick. Maybe both.
All of the above.
And then you hit them with international pool money, where not only can they not go find a hidden talent somewhere in the Caribbean or a hidden talent somewhere in one of the islands, but they can't go and they can't get a college kid that maybe they think can be quickly ran through their system and help their team in 2022.
So do you think that they'll do those things?
100%. But here's the problem. Everybody does this. Every team in baseball steals signs. But it's one thing to be the runner on second and giving the hitter two winks to let them know it's a breaking ball than somebody who's got a closed circuit wired television in the clubhouse tunnel and you hear him banging trash cans to let the person, let the hitter know off speed.
Using the camera in center field.
Exactly.
Well.
Like, and they're banging. I read the Athletic article yesterday and it was so interesting. Yeah. Ken Rosenthal, great job writing that up. But I'm going to tell you, this is serious stuff. Now the Astros doing this is the most severe I've ever heard of it. But the point is, If you don't do something about it now, somebody's going to do something later, and it's even going to be worse than that.
So I'm going to need to see Joe Torre do something to believe that he would.
I think he's going to.
So what is the equivalent of what the Patriots got with Spygate, where you lose? What's equivalent of a first-round pick, something that just is pretty
everything
crippling?
I just mentioned.
All of those things above you.
International money has to be it, because that's where the game's going. I know everybody calls it America's pastime, but our best players right now in the game are minorities.
Yeah.
So you need to go in there and you need to hit them in the international pocket.
So that would be interesting if they do that. I hope that they do that and that they handle it that way. I think you need to make a big public. The Astros have put themselves in an actionable position. And if you want a chance to clean this up in the MLB, no, but what you do is you make it where the risk is greater than the reward. And so what you do is you crush them. Take 10 rounds of draft picks and the international pool money, something like that, and just say, I'm just going to crush you for a year. Because losing a first-round pick in the NFL is that. Now, if they do first, 10, second, and they hit their international pool money, I think that would be okay.
You have to make
examples. I would go further than you probably have to. I hope you're right, and maybe I'm wrong. I've just watched, I guess, in individual situations, Joe Torre do absolutely nothing a lot of times.
Boys, it was that big of a story. That's all I have for Canner's Corner, because it literally is a huge story.
Well,
because
someone cheated.
This is the Wild Wild West, Canner.
Yeah.
If they don't do something about it, then the Cowboys can just show up and they can kill anybody and they can run the town.
Well, the fix was in. At the end of the day, the team that won the World Series did so because they cheated. And so that is a difference maker, right?
I'm going to look at the 2017 World Series and go, yeah, I mean, they cheated to win the World Series. Now, in fairness, Game 7 of the World Series was at L.A. that year. So it wasn't like they were able to do this at Minute Maid Park. But
the Indians put in a complaint way back in the day. I mean, there's been tons of teams that have been on it for 2 years
trying to get this thing going. Look, and I'm not – the Dodgers – like, all joking aside, the Dodgers blew that dang series anyway.
No, I mean, that's, yeah, right. But
couple
can you believe Mike Fiers blew the whistle on this?
Yeah,
he's got a ring. Yeah. He went out. He's thrown a no-hitter since then. He's a decent pitcher. I read the article, and he flat out just said, look, I'm tired of kids who are just barely scraping the bottom of the barrel not being able to keep their job because – they're the 26th man on the roster, and they think their breaking ball is good enough, but somebody knows it's coming, and they're getting sent back to AAA because they can't keep the ball in the park.
Good on him, though.
Good on Mike Fiers, man, but I bet he has upset a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm sure.
All right, hour number two. Starting lineup, we're going to talk about the college football playoff rankings. Not only that, but Tennessee. They actually inflict their will in the second half against Murray State. This was a 9-point lead for the Racers at halftime, only for the Vols to turn them on their head and hold Murray State to 19 second half points. Tyler and Will, it is your Wednesday starting lineup here on 99.1 FM, the Sports Animal.